Recording. All right. Mm-hmm. We'll finish this Rashi then. Okay. All right. Yeah. So the Yehuda is Hashem Gugolim. So the same thing should happen to Yehuda, whose bones now are, you know, as we said, dislocated. And then Rashi continues. He says, Atzma is Kol Hashvatim Yotzim Mitzrayim. Right. In other words, the bones of all the Shvatim, meaning, you know, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, and so on. Right. The fathers of the tribes. Right. Yotzim Mitzrayim Unisom B'neihem B'Midbar. And, you know, their children carry them in the wilderness. And this is what he said, you know, that Yosef said to his brothers, that you shall take my bones from here together with you. And what does itchem mean? Itchem means im atzmoisechem, together with your bones as well. All right. Now, all ivrei l'shofar, as we said, it means nichnasu atzmaisav. In other words, the various bones entered or re-entered, if you wish, limekom chiburon, to the place where they are joined. Right? Sheshofu misham, because they had departed from there. Gemod the shof meduchte. There's a Gemara in the Chulin, you know, that, you know, if let's say a limb is shof, you know, meduchte, it's out of its proper place. And of course, it's one of the simonim of the fact that the animal is considered trade.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Le shofo says, is luyus. No.
Yes.
No, that I can't figure out. Sorry, Rush.
Okay.
Huh? Obviously, it has something to do with this location, but I can't.
Islo locus? Islos?
I think that the is part is something like actually SE in French. In other words, it's used for reflexive or for passive. Lusdor. Not 100% sure. not even 10% sure.
Is that one word?
Well, I don't know. I think that maybe the whole thing should be together, because the word dura doesn't fit in over here either, you see. So I suspect that it's probably part of the French word. You know, you have to realize that they had what they call, you know, copiers who copied the text of the Gemara. And as time went on with the copying of the text, at times they would make mistakes in it. Mm. And this is why we have to have, you know, people who, you know, like the Rashal and others, you know, who go and they correct the text. So sometimes Greisen happened to be perpetuated, and particularly, let's say, if he's not a great kenner of the Rashi's old French. So you take a look, for example, at some of the translations of Rashi, you know, in the Chumash, where a lot more work has been done than it has been on the Rashi in the Gemara. And you see, some of the words you can recognize. I mean, there's many times I can recognize a word in French, I recognize a Latin or a Greek word or something like that, you know. But at other times, it's very difficult to try to figure out what it is. All right, but at any rate, we know what the Gemara is trying to tell us, okay? All right, so now the Gemara continues with another problem that that Yehuda had to face. Lohaba komayalei le misitu rekia. They did not want to let him come into the heavenly Mesifta. Obviously, you know, if you, after 120 years, hopefully, you know, we'll all join in the Mesifta up there. So, Moshe Rabbeinu had to pray again on behalf of Yehuda. He says, V'el amot v'yedum, bring him to his people. In other words, who are the people? The people in this particular case would be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and so on, okay? Well, Yehuda came up, all right, he got permission because of Moshe Rabbeinu's prayer to go up to the heavenly Mesifta over there, but he couldn't figure out, he didn't know how to carry on a Gemara discussion up there. Bahadei Rabbanan, you know, in the presence of the rabbis. I mean, they were greater experts than he was. So, again, Moshe Rabbeinu had to resort to a tefillah on behalf of Yehuda, and said, Yodav Rav Lo, right? So he says, please may his hands be able to be powerful for himself. And then, Lo Hava, it's all right, so maybe you could understand, but then, Lo Hava Yodav Farukikusha, he didn't know how to literally break Akasha. In other words, to solve a question that was put to him and he didn't know how to solve it. So then, the Ezer Metzorah of Tiyad, the Moshe Rabbeinu prayed, please, may he have help from those who are causing him pain. In other words, asking him kashas and he doesn't know how to answer them, right? All right, so much for Yehuda. There should have been a period over here, but of course, you know, they don't put in too many periods. So, Ibo Elohu, the question was asked, the Misas Kulanu Chozer or Dilmo the Misas Echadehem. When we said that the slayer can leave the Ir HaMiklot with the death of the Kohen Gadol, does it mean with the death of all three of them together, or does it mean only with the death of one? Of course, to a certain extent, you could say, how could you have at the same time
three
both, Kohen. You know, a Kohen Gadol who is Mashuach B'Shem HaMishcha and Merubah B'Godim, because chronologically it doesn't fit. The other one, you know, Shavah M'Mshuach, so this could happen at any time. But however, we're not interested right now in these 5 points. Question is, at any rate, would it require the death of all three of them, or perhaps the death of only one of them? Of course, as we see, halacha is with the death of any one of them. Okay. So Tashma, listen, says Nigmar Dinoi, the low Kohen Gadol. Let's say that his judgment, that is, you know, the slayer, when he appeared before the Beis Din and they judged that he should go into Golis, right? And let's say that there was no Kohen Gadol at that particular moment. There was an interim period, there was no Kohen Gadol. So in that case, tough luck. Eino yotzei misham le'olam. He's not permitted to leave the Ir HaMiklot ever. V'im Isa, v'hedah v'dahanach. And if there were a Kohen Gadol alive, then let him go back. With any one of these three. But the answer is, with the Lekka, there isn't anyone. None of the three are in existence at that time. Now that's based on the following Mishnah, and so we'll continue now with the next Mishnah. Of course, Rashi doesn't agree with the opinion, I mean, which is accepted as halacha. If you see, you know, it says the Hodeh Bahana, it says the Misas Beruba Begodim or Bishovim Mishuchusov, right? Let him go back either with the death of, right? Elalav Shmaminoe Kuhu. But rather, it must apply, the implication would be that it would require all of them to be dead.
Yeah,
both the Kohen Gadol and also the substitute.
There could be a time when there would not be a Kohen Gadol.
Yeah, that's a possibility, right. Yeah. In other words, the Kohen Gadol dies
and
they do not immediately appoint another Kohen Gadol. So in the interim period,
he gets
if he happens to be
sentenced to
Golis, then in that case his Golis is a perpetual Golis. He has to stay there until he himself will die. All right. This we learn, of course, from the next Mishnah, and therefore we'll continue with the next Mishnah. It says, Mishanigmar Dinoi. Once the verdict has been reached by the Beis Din, right, and then Meis Kohen Gadol, and the Kohen Gadol subsequently dies, so Harei Zein Ogela. And in that case, he doesn't even go into Golis, because, you know, the Kohen Gadol died, let's say, immediately after the judgment had already been rendered, before he even had a chance to go into Golis. So the Kohen Gadol had already passed away, and so therefore, in that case, he does not go into Golis. Imar shalei nigmar dino meis kohen gadol. Now, what happens if, let's say, the case is still under consideration? It's not, you know, the verdict has not been given yet, and the kohen gadol died. Uminu acher tachtov, and they appointed a new kohen gadol instead of the previous kohen gadol. Ula achar mikan, and after that, nigmar dino, then the verdict was rendered that he has to go into Golis, then in that case, Chozer b'Misos Shosheni, he can leave the Ir HaMiklot when the second, in other words, the new Kohen Gadol dies, but he has to wait for that period. Now, Nigmar Dino B'Loi Kohen Gadol, let's say that you know, his the verdict was reached in his case at a time when there was no kohen gadol. This is, you know, what we were referring to in the last part just previously. Or another possibility, the ahore kohen gadol, or let's say somebody accidentally happens to kill a kohen gadol, or the kohen gadol shaharag, or let's say it's the kohen gadol himself who accidentally killed somebody. Then in that case, in either of these three cases, eino yotzei mishom liyodam, right? He can never leave the ir hamiklat. Not only that, but it says the eino yotzei lo le'edus mitzvah velo le'edus momon velo le'edus nefoshes. Okay, he cannot leave the ir hamiklat even, let's say, to testify for a mitzvah. Now, what would be testifying for a mitzvah? For example, let's say, you know, let's say he saw the new moon. And of course, the din is that if you see the new moon, right, you have to go back, you know, to the right, you have to go back to the Sanhedrin, Yerushalayim, and then they proclaim, you know, that. But of course, one is insufficient. You have to have two witnesses. All right. But at any rate, you're going in order to testify for the performance of a mitzvah, okay? He's not allowed to do it. He has to stay in the ir hamiklat. But lo le'edus momon, let's say there's a trial where they require his testimony, you know, concerning some monetary affair, but again, he's not allowed to leave the ir hamiklat. And lo le'edus nefoshes, likewise, let's say there's a trial with somebody else, right? Well, edus nefoshes means, you know, if he saw a murder or something like that, okay, and he has to testify to that. Ba'afili Yisrael tzurichim lo. And even if the people of Israel need him, in other words, let's say the entire nation needs him, nevertheless, he can't leave the ir hamiklat. Once, you know, under the circumstances we said, any one of these three, he's there, he has to be there. Ba'afili tzadva Yisrael. And even if it were, even if he were in the ir hamiklat, the general of Israel, like Yoav ben Tzuri, in other words, the chief general, right? Einu yotzei mishom liyodam. He cannot leave it at all. Shenemar, as it is written, asher nos shama, where he has fled. Shom, they translate, why does it say asher nos shama, where he has fled? In other words, they say shom tehei diraso, he has to live over there. Shom tehei misaso, there is where he has to die. Shom tehei kivuraso, and there is where he has to be buried.
Oh, it's a very harsh sentence for somebody who did who killed somebody by accident.
Yeah, right. Well, we can understand, I mean, the case of the Kohen Gadol, I mean, we consider that's a heinous crime, whether he was the perpetrator or whether he was the one, you know, who was killed.
Yeah, but it was...
With the other ones, because there is no Kohen Gadol, it's a tough time. But nevertheless, you can see that since he is completely dependent upon a Kohen Gadol being alive at the time when he is sentenced, so therefore, if there is no Kohen Gadol at that time, then in that case, that's his tough luck.
Interesting why they tied it into to the Kohen Gadol death.
Well, as we said, I mean, after all, it's a question about kapara. All right. Kishem Shehoir Kerletes. Now, the Mishnah continues and says that even as the city of refuge provides refuge, so kach techumo kole, so likewise the techum around it also provides refuge. Now, what do we mean by the techum? Alright, if you remember, written about the cities that have to be set aside, particularly it speaks about the cities of the Levites, or Rehalavim, okay? And then it's written over there, Matzeisen, Madosen, Bekutsoir, Apayim Amor, that you have to measure outside the city 2,000 cubits, and this is to be used, as the Torah then says, you know, for fields and pasture for the cattle and things like that. And actually, it was also meant in order to add beauty to the city itself by providing a green belt
around
the city. Now, of course, on the basis of the idea, you know, that the tchum is 2,000 amos, 2,000 cubits, this gives us already the ruling as far as how far can we walk on Shabbos without violating the laws of Shabbos. Namely, we're allowed to go as far as a Tchum Shabbos. But once we reach the Tchum Shabbos, we're not allowed to go any further. Now, of course, I'm not talking about many cases. I mean, obviously, since Long Meadow and Springfield are so close together, there is no great open space between them. So from the point of view of walking on Shabbos, there's no problem. You can walk from Long Meadow to Springfield or vice versa, and you're not violating Tichum, okay? But maybe from Long Meadow into Enfield, basically, already, there may be something over there, okay? Depends.
It's continuously settled, right.
It probably is. I don't think that would be a problem today, frankly. But in those days, it was.
Probably going
it was
to another state, though.
Yeah, right.
Probably George Washington Bridge.
Yes.
You take that?
Yeah, right. George Washington Bridge, I mean, is considered a valid point of junction so that, you know, you can go from Jersey to Manhattan.
Because there is no habitation along that.
Granted, but nevertheless, it's considered.
Constant habitation going across it all the time.
Certainly, there's always traffic going across over there. There's no question. Okay. So, all right. So we said that even as the city can provide shelter, so likewise the Tichum also shelters gives shelter to the Rotzeach. Now it says, Rotzeach sheyotzeh chutz l'tchum, but what happens if the Rotzeach goes outside of the Tichum? He goes outside of the 2,000 amos, you know, surrounding the Ir HaMiklot, umetzoye goel hadom, and the goel hadom comes across him over there, so there's a difference of opinion. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Yoimer, Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, Mitzvah biyad Goel Adam, Urishus biyad Kol Adam. He says, it is a mitzvah to the Goel Adam to kill this man, to exact vengeance. He says, it's a mitzvah. And he says, if there is no Goel Adam over there, then there's a Rishus. He says, it is,
anybody else can
it's voluntary for anybody else to kill him because he dared to go outside the Ir HaMiklot. But it doesn't say that it's a mitzvah for anybody else. He says only that the others have permission to kill him if he does. Of course, that's Rabbi Yossi Aglili's opinion. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, no sir, he says. He says, Rishus b'yad Goel Hadam. He says, the Goel Hadam does not have the commandment that he must kill him, but it's voluntary on his part. If he wants to, then he can do it, and he's not going to be punished for it. But if he decides that he does not want to shed blood, then in that case, that's his choice. Bechol Adam, and as far as anybody else, says Rabbi Akiva, Chayovin Olav, if anybody else should happen to kill the Rotzeach, then they could be sentenced to death, because they don't have this Rishus.
They don't have the obligation.
They don't have the obligation.
The
they don't have the permission to go and to kill
right.
another Jew. Okay, I think we shall stop at this point tonight. And Yetz Hashem, we shall continue now from the Gemara over here on Yud Aleph, Omid Beis.
Okay. So it's now December 27th, 1995.
Yeah, it's going to be 1996.
Very soon.
Will
we meet next week?
Sure, we'll meet next week. Why shouldn't we meet next week?
we're on slogans.
We're talking about a snowstorm. There's a pasuk in Tehillim which says, "Gibborei Keach, Oisei Ritzonai." In other words, they are heroic in spirit, those who do God's will. So I guess we have to also learn how to be Gibborei Keach, in that even though we have snowstorms, but hopefully we'll continue to learn without interruption.
I'm willing. So where are we now?
All right, we'll start with the Gemara right now on Yud Aleph on the Beis. We're going to now take the Mishnah phrase by phrase and see what it is. All right. The first part of the Mishnah says, Mishadigma Adinoi, if, let's say, he stood before the Beis Din, and the Beis Din determined the fact that he was liable to go into exile because he had killed in such a way, you know, that his punishment had to be gullus. So let's say when that happened, after the verdict was rendered, Meis Kohen Gadol, the high priest then died, and this was before he had actually gone into gullus.
Mm-hmm.
So he hadn't budged from the court yet. Okay, so Hareza in a Geller. Okay, then he does not go into galus. This is what the first part of the Mishnah says. All right. So my Tama, says the Gemara, what is the reason? So Amar Abaye, Abaye says, Kal v'chaymer. He says, this is a Kal v'chaymer. Uma misha golo kvar yotso. Look, if he had already gone into exile, right, and the Kohen Gadol then died, then what would be the law? The law is that, you know, he goes back home again, right? So Achshav misha legolo, now that he has not even yet gone into exile, eino din shelo yigla. Isn't it logical that he doesn't go into exile? So the Gemara questions this Kal v'chaymer. Says v'dilmoy, says maybe no. Hai de golo ichparle. Maybe the one who had already gone into exile, so the golos served as a kapara for him. In other words, he had that atonement by virtue of the fact that he'd gone into golos. And hai de loy golo loy. Whereas the one who had not gone to Golas, we would say that he did not yet have the kapara which he needs in order to atone for the fact that he had shed innocent blood. So they say, Midi, tell me, he says, Golas come kapara. Tell me, you mean to tell me that Golas is the thing, you know, that brings about kapara? He says, Misas koinunim kapara. On the contrary, what the Torah stresses is the fact that the Kohen Gadol, if he dies, then he has kapara. So, in other words, if he had already gone into, if he had not gone into exile, then in that case he still does not have to go into exile, as long as the Kohen Gadol died after he had, you know, after the verdict had been reached in his case, because the Misas Kohen Gadol, this is the thing that affected kapara for him. So that's in reference then to the first part of the Mishnah. Hi. All right. Then the next statement in the Mishnah read as follows. Im ad shalei nigmar dinoi. Let's say the verdict had not yet been reached. Okay? Meis kohen gadol, and at that particular point the kohen gadol died. Uminu acher tachtav. I'm reading back again to the Mishnah, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they had appointed a different kohen gadol instead of him, and after the appointment of the new Kohen Gadol, then the verdict was finally reached as far as the fact that the Beis Din ruled that he has to go into exile. So, in that case, the din is chozer b'misoso shel sheni. He is permitted to go home only upon the death of the new Kohen Gadol, the second Kohen Gadol, but not of the first one, because at that particular point, the verdict had not yet been reached when the first Kohen Gadol died. Okay. So the Gemara again wants to know, how can we figure that out from the text? He says, Menohani Mile, how do we know these things? So Omar Rav Kana said, the Omar Kro, he says, Hosek says, the Yoshav Bo, in other words, the manslayer is to dwell in the Ir HaMiklot, Ad Mois HaKohen HaGadol, right, until the death of the high priest, Asher Moshach Oisei B'Shemen HaKodesh, whom he has anointed literally, right, with the holy anointing oil. Now, the reason why I say literally, because obviously the Pshat cannot be understood that way, but literally it does, and that's what they ask. They say, V'chihu Moshcho, you mean to say it's the murderer who anoints the Kohen Gadol? So we can't understand it that way.
This is a digression.
Yeah.
But the need for a drasha is amplified by a statement earlier, because Misha, you remember the Kama Kama, Misha Gola Kvar.
Right.
Yeah, Misha Lo Gola Achas Kama Vakama. How about Misha Lo Nigma Din Achas Kama Vakama Vakama?
Yeah, right. But Misha Lo Nigma Din, obviously, he cannot go out, period. And this is what we'll see again. Okay? So that, all right, so getting back over here to what the Gemara has to say, he says, Achihu Moshcho, tell me, is it the murderer, is it the manslayer who anoints the Kohen Gadol? Elezesh Nimshach B'yonav. But rather, we're talking about the Kohen Gadol who has been anointed, obviously, it's been anointed, you know, by his fellow Kohanim, right, in his own lifetime. So, in other words, we see that in this particular case, that the manslayer has his time in exile is determined by the time of the second one, in whose lifetime, you know, in other words, in his lifetime, the lifetime of the slayer, then the second Kohen Gadol was anointed. So now they want to know, what's the connection between the Kohen Gadol, who in the first instance, I mean, he wasn't Kohen Gadol at the time, so why does the second guy, I mean, why does the manslayer exile depend upon a Kohen Gadol in this particular case, when the Kohen Gadol had nothing to do with him? So my habalayelamevat, what should he have done? In other words, that you know, the onus is placed upon his death for the other guy to you know, to be able to leave the city of exile. Okay, so the answer that he gives is hoyeloyelavakish rachmim sheyigmo dilim v'schus v'lo bikish. The answer is that the second guy, after all, he was anointed, we said, before the verdict was passed by the Beis Din. Okay, so he should have prayed to the Ribbono Shel Olam that the verdict of the court would be favorable to the manslayer. So the low bikesh, they didn't pray along these lines. Therefore,
who
what?
Didn't pray?
The Kohen Gadol, the new Kohen Gadol, right? Yeah. The new Kohen Gadol didn't pray on behalf of an innocent verdict, so to speak. Okay. And so because he didn't do it, therefore his death has to be tied in with the exile of the other one, and the other one cannot go out until, you know, the Kohen Gadol, until the stupid Kohen Gadol dies. Omar Abaye said, he says, Naktinan means that we have a good tradition, okay? And for the good tradition, he always quotes, you know, something else that has been learned. He says, Nigmar Dino Vomeis. There is a statement which says that, let's say the verdict has finally been reached, right? And then the manslayer himself dies.
Yeah.
So, molichnes atzmeis of the shah. So, you know what they have to do? They don't bury him where he should be buried right now, but instead they have to first take his bones, where?
To
the city of refuge, right, Lishon. Dichsiv, as it is written, what does the pasuk say? It says, Lo shuv lo sheves bo'aretz ad mois ha-kohen, that he is to return and dwell in the land until the death of the Kohen, right? Ve'ezah yeshiva sheba'aretz, and tell me, what kind of dwelling do you have in the earth itself, very literally? So the answer is, Hadayoymezu kibura. So you have to come to the conclusion, this means kibura. So in other words, according to Abaye, the bones of the manslayer have to be taken to the Ir HaMiklot in order to be buried over there. Tana, we also learned as follows. It says, Meis koidim shemeis koin godol. What happens if the guy was already living in exile, okay? And he died before the Kohen Gadol died. In other words, he died a natural death over there in the Ir HaMiklot, and the Kohen Gadol still didn't die as yet. So, what is the din in his case? So the answer is, Meilichin Atzmeisav Al Kivrei Avosav. Then they bring back his bones to where his ancestors are buried. In other words, whether they take him back to his own hometown for burial over there. Dichsiv, as is written, Yoshuv HaRotzeach, El Eretz HaChuzosol. The Rotzeach is to return to the land of his possession. Ezehu Yeshiva Shehibes HaChuzosay. And what kind of dwelling is it in the land of his possession? Have a Yomer. You have to say Zukibura. Okay, that's fine. Nigbad Dino. Now what happens if the verdict has been reached, you know, that he should go into Golis? Okay? And the Nasor Koyin Ben Gusha Ben Chalutza. All of a sudden, they discover that there is a tremendous blemish in the Kohen Gadol. Now, what is the blemish? The blemish is that they find out that his father, or that he was not his father, but his mother, that he was the son of a Gerusha. In other words, his father, the Kohen, had married a divorced woman, and he was born of a divorced woman, okay? Or Ben Chalutza. Or his father, the Kohen, had married a woman, you know, in other words, the brother You know, the brother's almana, right? And, he married her.
But aren't, if he's not Kohen Gadol, he's allowed to marry a widow, isn't he?
Yep, this is a divorcee. I didn't say
a
widow.
No.
Okay, no. You're asking a very legitimate question, right? This we learned in Gemara Kedushin.
Yeah,
okay. The answer is that he can only marry a widow who... No, the Kohen Gadol...
No, he's not a Kohen Gadol. He's
allowed.
A regular... He's
not allowed at all, period.
Yeah, I realize
okay,
that, but I'm talking
okay.
about he's not a Kohen Gadol at this particular point.
He's not a Kohen Gadol. He still cannot marry either a Gerusha or a Chalutza. The reason why not Chalutza is that because she was already married to another man, so they consider her as being a little bit tainted in this matter. So even though normally it's a mitzvah for a man to marry, the Chalutza of his brother, brother, yeah, it's a mitzvah, but nevertheless, we also say...
I'm not talking about that. Somebody else. You're mixing in somebody else here.
No.
We say the father had married a chalutza, meaning Reuven died, left the wife, Shimon,
right.
The brother, did chalitza.
Right. Okay.
Then this woman is a chalutza, now she goes off and she marries a Kohen.
Yep. Okay, correct.
And then
right.
It turns out years back, after this guy is elevated
right.
to the high priesthood,
okay.
that he is in fact tainted because his mother was a chalutza.
Correct. Okay, very good.
Because
it's a very good point.
Well, you
right.
have a good point. What happens, I think if a brother does chalitza, then there is no mitzvah for any brother down the line anymore.
No, because so once she has been, right.
So if there
right.
is, so you couldn't have a situation
it's not
where...
not redemption, but
I mean,
once they've gone through the business of chalitza, then in that case, there's no longer what they call zika. Zika means that she's tied to him until either he performs yibum, in other words, he marries her, or he performs chalitza.
Yeah.
He goes through the ceremony where...
rejects her.
Take off the shoe and everything else and so on. Huh?
What happens if a Kohen Gadol's brother dies and leaves a wife?
Yeah.
The answer is he's not allowed to marry.
He's not allowed to marry because she's an almana and he's obliged to do a chalitza.
First of all, Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry an almana either.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Sure,
so
that's the whole point. I'm talking about chalitza.
Yeah.
A Kohen Gadol...
Right.
Because brother dies.
If he's actually Kohen
Gadol...
Leaves
an almana. So
right.
he, now Kohen Gadol, cannot marry an almana.
Right.
But is obliged to do chalitza.
Okay.
He should go through chalitza.
Yeah, that I can see. I mean, that he would have to go through business chalitza.
He had no choice.
There's no question about that. That definitely is against the law. Of course, today... He can only marry
a
basula, correct. Once he's a Kohen Gadol, he can only marry a basula, right. That's correct. Well, anyway, so we have this case over here where, they come and... What? As far as Gerusha or Chalutza? Applies to any Kohen. No, the virgin, only the Kohen Gadol is prohibited. But a Kohen can marry an almana, that he can do. But he is not allowed to marry a gerusha, a divorced woman, a chalutza, a woman who has received chalitza in the past, right? Or, there's one more category, he's not allowed to marry a gioris. Right.
Convert.
And chalola, of course, this is a general category of any woman, who would be prohibited to him. And of course, a zayna, a woman who has a reputation already.
These aren't listed.
Right, yeah.
These aren't listed here.
No, it's not.
It's not an exclusive list.
Right, exactly. You're right.
But you can easily see how Tara's being built on.
Yes. They're 100% right. Okay, so at any rate, now the question is as follows. Alright, here is a question. Alright, the guy's gone into exile, right? And he's gone into exile during the time that we have a Kohen Gadol, who, as far as we're concerned, has been a fine and outstanding Kohen Gadol. Okay, now all of a sudden people come and they prove that this Kohen Gadol was really not such a good Kohen Gadol because of his ancestry, not because of him necessarily. They're not saying that he married a Chalola, for example, Chas v'Sholom. But what they are saying, is that actually he was a Cholol. He himself was a Cholol, means that he's a Kohen who is disqualified from being a Kohen. Okay? The Cholol, right. Huh? Yeah, because of his ancestry, right. Because of his ancestry. So I say, it has nothing to do with him, because he didn't marry a woman who was prohibited to him. But nevertheless, he is the son of a woman who was prohibited to his father. Okay? So that he becomes a Cholol, which means that, you know, what happens now to what he has done in the past. Okay? So, not only what happens now, you know, to what he has done in the past, but also how is it going to affect this business of the person who has gone into exile and is dependent upon, let's say, shall we say, the good favor of a, you know, an active Kohen Gadol.
Yeah, well, they have to. It would seem to me they would have to put a new Kohen Gadol in office.
All right.
And
obviously, they're going
to
have to replace him. But the question is now.
And they have to wait.
All right, but this is not the question that they want to discuss right now. They're still talking about the guy
what
in exile. What happens to the guy in exile? Based upon the fact that what happens in the case of the Kohen Gadol when we say that he's a disqualified Kohen Gadol? Okay, he's disqualified. All right, so. Yeah, so it says Poligei Bo Rabbi Ami Rabbi Yitzchok Napka. Okay, says that there is a difference of opinion concerning this Kohen Gadol between Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Napka, and also not just with this Kohen Gadol, but also how is it going to affect the person who's gone into exile. It says Chad Oimer. One of them says as follows. He says Meiso Kahuna. He says it's as though the Kahuna itself, in other words, the being a Kohen, or the state of being a Kohen, has passed away. No, if it has passed away, then in that case, what? We have to say it's like death.
Yeah.
And if it's like death, then in other words, the guy, if he's already in exile, can go home. This is one opinion. The Chadoimer, and the other one says, no, doesn't work that way. You know why? He says, because Botla Kahuna. We have to say that the Kahuna was already disqualified from the moment his father married either the Grusha, you know, the divorced woman, or the Chalutza, okay? Or any other woman, you know, who is disqualified to him, okay? So, Lemo b'flukta Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua k'miflegei, are we to say that this machlokes that we have over here between Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yitzchok Nachpo is similar to another machlokes that we have between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua? Ditnan, as we learned in the Mishnah, the Mishnah is quoted in various places, it says all over there that Hoya Omid Makriv al Gabe Hamizbeach. Let's say the Kohen was standing and he was offering up an offering, sacrifice, right? On the altar. Venoda, and then became known Shehu ben Grusha ben Chalutza, right? Became known that he is, you know, the son of a Gerusha or the son of a Chalutza. So, what does Rabbi Eliezer say? Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, kol korbono she'ekriv hisulin. Whatever korbonus he has sacrificed in the past automatically become invalid. In other words, it goes back. Whatever he did, then all the services that he ever performed are invalid. For Rabbi Yeshua, machshir. He says, whatever has been done in the past, this is kosher. It was valid, period. It's only as of now that it becomes invalid.
No.
Okay? So, mando ma meso, then are we to say that the person who says that, you know, mesa kuhuna, that the kuhuna itself has died, so he is Rabbi Yehoshua, who says that only we look only as of now and not, you know, what happened before, as far as korbanos are concerned. Uman Doma Botla, and the one who says that, you know, everything that the Kohen Gadol had done is absolutely invalid, it's Rabbi Eliezer, who is like Rabbi Eliezer, who said, we go back and we invalidate everything ex post facto, if you wish, right? So, they say, not necessarily so.
Retroactive,
thank you.
Retroactive, right?
Is there another term for it?
What?
Is there another term for it other than real? Because ex post facto is a bit different.
Yeah, you're right. But okay, retroactively is correct. Right. The mafreya is retroactive.
The mafreya, what else would you say as far as a.
Yeah, in this particular case, the mafreya usually is translated as like retroactively.
Is there a Latinism? There's no Latinism that would cover them.
No. I mean, I can't say ex ante, something like that. That doesn't make any sense.
Parenthetically,
okay.
Also, yeah. The question I asked you about the Kal Vachomer, Tosfos asks the question and gives your answer.
Yeah.
What about the Kal Vachomer?
Way back, the Kal Vachomer about the Nigmar Din.
Right.
Tosfos Kama Vachomer, let's take it a step further.
Right.
But he didn't like my proposed answer, which was, that's why Menahani Mila, you need a Pusik.
Uh-huh.
He liked your answer better, that the Kal Vachomer is really invalid, because what's there to forgive if there's no Gmar Din, what's there to forgive? He uses exactly your words.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you,
Tosfos. Tosfos, what's your conclusion?
Okay. So, getting back now to this question that we just raised about the difference of opinion about Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, right? Mm-hmm. Rabbi Yeshua says only as of now does it become bottle, but what has gone before, you say it's kosher, whereas Rabbi Eliezer says the whole thing, all the kabbanis that he ever sacrificed, they were all absolutely bottle. Okay, no, we said that the guy has already been sentenced and he's gone into exile, okay? Right, and he's dependent upon the death of the Kohen Gadol, correct? All right. The other opinion is obviously good. It doesn't go free.
He's exiled for life.
Right.
He
remains over there. He's going to remain over there, right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, because there's nothing, to free him right now, yeah. Because we say, it's as if, you say, you're right, Mike.
That's what he says.
Yeah. It's as if, you know, there was no functioning Kohen Gadol at that time, and we said before that. Actually, Nigma Dino, right?
Oh, no, Rashi.
Right.
So you already said it, there's no valid.
There isn't a valid coin at that time.
Correct.
Yeah.
Not only him, but all the rest of the criminals.
Yeah, because it says over there, right? Yeah. And so therefore, we said, that Nigmar Dino, going back again over there, right, it says Nigmar Dino Belay Kohen Gadol, right, take a look in the middle of the Mishnah over there, that if, the verdict was finally reached and there was no functioning Kohen at that time, no Kohen Gadol, or Vahahore Kohen Gadol, or, let's say, somebody accidentally killed the Kohen Gadol, or the Kohen Gadol Shaharag, or if the Kohen Gadol himself was the manslayer in this case, then what is the din? They have to go into exile. The Eino Yetzi Misham Le'olam, right? And they're not allowed to leave exile for the rest of their days. Even if another Kohen should, go on the scene and die, these guys don't get off. I mean, they have to stay in exile already. This is what we said over there in the Mishnah. So that this is what would be over here in this particular case. So he says, I'll leave with the Rabbi Eliezer Kuliyam Le'pliga. He says, nobody is in disagreement as far as Rabbi Eliezer is concerned. He's consistent. He says it's no good, and everything, that's happened before, you have to say is invalid and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, now with, the manslayer, Ki'pliga, the machlekes is, I'll leave with Rabbi Yeshua, that it would be in accordance with Rabbi Yeshua. Namely, if Rabbi Yeshua said that only as of now it becomes invalid, then we would say, Manda Oma Meso, the one who said that, Meso Kahuna, that it's as if, the priesthood itself has died, okay? Then in that particular case, we would say that would be in agreement with Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, who says, as of right now, right? Manda Oma Batla, and the one who says that, on the contrary, that the kahuna is simply, it's completely invalid, right? And therefore, it's as if it never existed in the first place. So he says, Ad Khan Leka Omar. And the other one would say, Butler. So yes, the answer is no. He says, Ad Khan Leka Omar of Yeshua. Awesome. He says, no. We can argue as follows, that even though Rabbi Yeshua holds this as far as the Korbanos is concerned, he is not necessarily committed to holding the same opinion as far as the manslayer and his relation to the Kohen Gadol, who we've just ruled is an invalid Kohen Gadol. Mm-hmm. Okay, why? Because he says we have a pasuk which speaks about the sacrifices, and therefore that is a separate category by itself. He says chosom in the case of the sacrifice, you know, is makrival gabe hamizbeach, right? So the pasuk says the siv boreich ad Hashem chelo, right? Before yodov tirtzeh, which means God will bless his chelo, which means literally his substance, right? In other words, he'll make him, he'll give him new strength and everything else and substance. Before yodov tirtzeh, and you know, you, O God, will be satisfied with the work of his hands. But they take the word chelo and they give it a new twist. What is the new twist? It says chelo is related to the word chulin, cholol. In other words, you know, invalid, okay, or not sacred. And it says afilu chalolin shabai, even those sacrifices which were carried on in the past and which were really done by a kohen who is not valid, right? We still say tirtzeh. What is tirtzeh? So for this we have to understand. Tirtzeh is probably, in my opinion over here, a reference to what we call the tzitz. Kohen Gadol had this plate, a golden plate on his kova, right, on his hat, the turban, whatever you want to call it, and on the mitre, correct? So, and, you know, upon it was written, Kodesh Lad Hashem. And according to our sages, what was the function of the tzitz? What did it do? What? Yeah, well, that's not exactly what they said. That the tzitz is going to enable God to be pleased with the sacrifices that were carried on, even if they were invalid. Yeah, so that this is the idea, okay? Normally you don't want to have it, but nevertheless, if the Kohen Gadol is wearing the tzitz, then it would be meratzeh. All korbanos. Okay, this is particularly true as far as korbanos sibur is concerned. Correct, but it refers to the korbanos sibur. Yeah, sibur. Okay, you need. Okay, it refers to public sacrifices. This is what it refers to. In other words, the korbanos sibur, the two daily sacrifices, right? The, you know, that you carry on, the boker and the benor bayim and so on, right? And then any of the musafim, in other words, any of the additional karbonos that would be brought on Shabbos or Rosh Chodesh or Yontev, you know, Chalamed and so on, okay? Yes. So,
if
it's that.
If the Kohen Gadol had gone and performed the Yom Kippur service to the Kodesh Kodeshim,
right,
and he came out on his own power,
right,
that
it was acceptable to Rebbe Shimon.
And later it was found to be a tainted going descended from correct
okay. That's nice. It's very good.
Does
but
that
the
mean that was it was the that
okay.
That,
because he was performing Avodah Sibur. Right. Exactly. He was performing service on behalf of the entire community of Israel, so the resumption is then that the sacrifice is acceptable to the Rebbe Shimon, whatever he did.
The question is, was there ever such an incident? You would imagine it would be cited in
I don't remember that it ever happened. I mean, we've had Kohanim Gedolim who were not exactly great paragons of virtue, right? During the time of the helpless, right? No question. Or they were Tzedukim, they were Sadducees and so on. Yes. Yeah. Okay, I agree with you. Okay, I agree. So I'm not disputing the fact that it was a Buddhist Sibur, and therefore, if he performed it, then the Rebbeinu Shel Olam will accept it, period. Okay?
Well, it's true that after the second base in Israel, they discontinued sending him in there because they were.
Not true.
Not true.
They continued to go live with Lifnim, in other words, into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur. That was part of it. They had to bring the Ketores. You understand? They had to bring it and, you know, let the Ketores go inside, you know, the Holy of Holies. Okay? This is one of the most solemn parts of the service, no question. A very difficult one, by the way. because he had to carry, you know, a spoon, a heavy spoon with incense, and the other one in the hand, he had hot coals in a, you know, a, yeah, whatever you call it, a container or something like that, you know. So he had, and he had to go in very circuitous way, because they wanted to make sure that nobody looked into the Holy of Holies. So, and in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, they had to go in like this, or rather like this, and go around over here behind, and then come in like this into the Holy Holies. And we're not finished with that. When he finished the Avodah over there, the, you know, the Ketores, then he had to back out. He was not allowed, you know, to turn around with his back, you know, to the Holy of Holies. He had to back out and, you know, go back again until it finally, it was a very difficult part of the entire Avodah of the Yom Kippur for the Kohen Gadol. You read the Gemara and, you know, Masechus Yoma, where this is described, and you'll see it was not an easy job. The poor Kohen Gadol Nebuch, you know, after all, he had to fast the same as anybody else.
Yeah.
And he didn't get a night's sleep,
they
as
kept
you
him
know.
Up at night,
right,
no.
They kept him up all night long in order to make sure that no soul would happen to him and so on. And also, you know, the Kohen were not allowed to wear any shoes. Nobody, I mean, Israel and people were not allowed to wear shoes in the Beis HaMikdash. So he had to go there on the marble floor. I don't have to tell you, you know, it's not that comfortable and so on and so forth. And he really had to work very, very hard on Yom Kippur.
Didn't dare sneeze when he was going again, huh?
Well, I don't remember ever reading that the Kohen Gadol sneezed.
He dropped the cold and everything.
But, thank God, I mean, he had the strength to do it.
That's all also, because they bring down the Pesach of Rabbi Yeshua Mafshir as the Pesach of Lotha. If you just look at the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah,
you have
the letter for Rabbi Yeshua, but no selection between Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yisrael Nafka.
Correct. In other words,
this is
Lotha. Right. The business about the guy who was in exile, this is not determined, because you could understand that maybe Rabbi Yeshua also agrees, you know, that the guy is stuck and they let him stay already over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could say like a butler kahuna as far as that's concerned.
But
as we said, the business of the sacrifice is already a different story, because we have a special pasuk for that. Baruch Ad Hashem Chelo. In other words, Afilu Kalolin Shaboy. Right. Abol Hocha. But, you know, he concludes, but in our case, the case that we're talking about over here in Marcus, about the guy who is already in Golis, and we discover that, you know, the Kohen Gadol is
tainted.
Has a psul, he's tainted. So I feel that Rabbi Yeshua made it, that then Rabbi Yeshua also might be in agreement, you know, that he stays the next time. Okay. Now,
two interesting points. I mean, one would imagine what compels Besdin to be Nigmar Din, to actually reach a Gemar Din if they know the Kohen Gadol is dead, or presumably this is clarified later, the news arrives afterwards.
Well, obviously, right.
Presumably the news arrives afterwards that when they did the Gemar Din, the Kohen Gadol was dead.
I mean,
had they known, they would probably hold off making
the
Gemar Din.
We have to remember that the Nigmar Din, I mean, he's judged by a Besdin in his own hometown,
right.
Or in his own home district. I mean, if the town that he lives in is too small for a Besdin, then in that case, right. That's the Machlekas. Machlekas and Sanhedrin. But the basic rule is that even the Besdin shall give, you know, would be sufficient. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So presumably the whole you don't even know, they discover after the Gemar Din that the Kohen Gadol had died. And
correct.
The Nigmar Din when there was no Kohen Gadol. Presumably, if they were aware there wasn't a Kohen Gadol, they would wait until the appointment of the Kohen Gadol before reaching
that they could,
Gemar Din.
Right, if they want to do so. It depends upon whether they feel that they want
to. It's a devastating penalty to inflict on
them. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That he has to spend the rest of his days with in Golis and so on. But on the other hand, as we see, I mean, people could also die in Golis, and in that case, what happens? So we see that in that case, they bring back the body to Eretz HaKuzo.
So how about if they, the question I didn't bring up before, if they're equating, treating the body as they would the living person, so if they take his bones to Golis, when the Kohen Gadol dies, should they bring his bones back to Eretz HaKuzo?
They should, but they also determined, though, that then they would bury him in the Ir Miklat.
to dig them up and bring them back to Hachakuz HaSom?
Could be. But that's not what it says.
Dig them up and bring them back.
It doesn't say that, but it's the logical. It's the logical.
Would be
the logical extension.
Would be nice.
And they didn't have any compunctions, actually. There never was any traditional compunction about moving the bones, as amply illustrated in Tanakh.
Yeah.
Right. These are all hypothetical cases, anyway. We don't have
it's true. Like, I mean, But, you know, many hypothetical cases fall in the category of what we say, Drosh Mekabel Schar. In other words, seek out, think about it, analyze it, and get the reward for that, even if it doesn't have a practical application. Okay. So then afterwards it says, Nigmar Dino, etc. Well, let's take a look at that one. All right. Yeah, it says Nigmar Dinam Balay Kohen Gadol, right? And I go in and so it's not any Yotzei Misham Yom. All right, Vinei No Yotzei, and then afterwards it says that he is not allowed to leave the Yer Miklot, you know, if he's already in exile. Lo Leidus Mitzvah, neither to give testimony for where it's a mitzvah. As we said, I mentioned last week. For example, if he saw the new moon. Together with somebody else, okay? He wants to go to Yerushalayim in order to testify before the Sanhedrin over there that he saw the new moon. After all, it is a mitzvah, if you see it. But no, he doesn't have that permission to leave the Yomiklot. But lo leidus mamon, nor if there's a case involving monetary matters where he himself has to testify, you know, let's say he saw that a loan took place, and he could testify to it, but nevertheless, he's not allowed to leave in order to give that testimony. The low latest devotion is the same thing. We saw a murder which was committed, or something like that. Not allowed to leave in that. Okay. Mm. Not only that, but then it says, Vapilu Yisrael Tzrichim Lo, right? Even if all Israel depend upon him, they need his services. Let's say he would be like Yiftach HaGilodi, okay? Story about Yiftach is, if you, I don't know if you remember, but that's Jephthah, okay? He was kicked out of his father's house.
Remember? Yeah.
And his brothers, they hated him, and they despised him, and they said that you are ben isha cheresato. In other words, it's like implying, you know, that your mother was a prostitute or something like that. And so, you understand? And as a result, what happened? So he went to some place called Eretz Tov, and there he gathered unto himself the bikers and the and the gangsters. I mean, the whatever you call it, you know what I mean. Of his own day, and then, you know, they became a gang, so to speak. And then all of a sudden, the people of Israel are attacked by the enemy, and they have nobody to save them. So at that particular time, then they come to Yiftach and they say, look, you're the man, you have to come and save us, period. Okay?
Yeah.
So, Afilu Yisrael Tzrichim Lo, let's say if he were in the Ir HaMiklot, because he had to be over there, you know, he was sentenced to be, right? Then in that case, also, he's not allowed to leave it. And then they give the example of Afilu Sar Tzvo Yisrael, and even if he were the chief general of Israel, Kiyoah ben Tzruya, as you know, Yoav, the son of Tzruya, it says, Einu Yotzei Misham Le'olam. He's not allowed to leave there ever. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Asher Nos Shoma, he has fled over there. Shom Tehei Diraso, that's where he has to live. Shom Tehei Misaso, that's where he has to die. And Shom Tehei Kiburaso, there he has to be buried. Okay, this is what the Mishnah says. So, we come back over here, and since we mentioned Yoav, so we're going to talk about Yoav now. It says, Nigmar, so Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, he says, Shtei Tohu Yois Toh Yoav, Ve'esashon. He says, Yoav ben Tzruya made two mistakes at that particular moment. Of course, the particular moment was with the death of King David. He knew that his life was in danger because David had a falling out with him. So it's a very long story about the relationship between King David and between Yoav ben Tzruya. Yoav served him faithfully all the days of his life. Not only that, he was actually a first cousin for King David. Tzruya was the mother, she was the sister to David's mother, okay?
He went by his mother's name.
Yeah, yeah, which happened from time to time. that they use the mother's name rather than the father's name. Okay? Particularly in the case of, princes and things like that.
Sure.
Yeah. Because after all, let's say if the king had several different wives, they wanted to distinguish between, was it the wife of this one, the wife of that? The mother of the
son
of
so and so. I never assumed anything other than Surya was his mother.
Surya was the mother, but
is that a
as I say,
it's not
in Devarah HaYomim, she's listed as a sister to David's mother.
Is his father identified? Is Yoav's father identified at any point?
No.
Presumably, the standard explanation of that might be that his ancestry was in dispute.
Possibly, that's a possibility, or the other one is that maybe the father had died at a very young age or something like that, so that it was the mother who was the dominant person in his life. Okay? At any rate, I said that he had served David faithfully. However, in doing so, he had disposed of people who David, for reasons of political correctness, would have preferred to keep alive. This was particularly true, of course, in the case of Avner ben Ner, who was Saul's cousin, Saul's uncle to be exact. He was the uncle of Saul, and he was Saul's general. Okay? And then, after the death of Saul, they had one of his sons serving as king of Israel, whereas David was king of Judah. Okay? But, the nation eventually decided that they wanted David in preference, and so there was all kinds of political scheming, including the fact that Avner ben Ner delivered, the kingdom of Israel, the other ten tribes, to David, okay? So David, in turn, wanted to make Avner ben Ner the general and put aside Yoav ben Tzruya. And, of course, Yoav resented that, and so he had Avner assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a couple of other cases too. David also never forgave Avner.
Presumably because Avner killed Absalom.
Amasai.
Amasai,
right.
Okay.
Right. And then the other one with Absalom, if you recall. The fact is that David wanted to spare his son Absalom, even though Absalom conspired to murder his father and take over the kingdom. But David had always spoiled him. He loved him, he spoiled him and everything else. So Yoav ben Tzruya took advantage of the fact that Absalom, when fleeing, was caught by his thick hair in a tree, that he killed him, put him out of the way. So as a result, David didn't punish Yoav during his lifetime, but what did he tell his son Shlomo to do? He says, you'll know what you're supposed to do with him, okay? You know what you have to do with him. So Shlomo knew what he had to do, and of course Yoav, he happened to back the wrong candidate for kingdom, because he backed what was the name again of the other son, for a moment that his name slips me, but anyway, it's the beginning of Melachim Aleph over there. Very first chapter, Melachim Aleph. You'll find it also in Hafer v'Chayasorah. Take a Yechomish and take a look at Chayasorah.
Chayasorah,
you said? Yeah. Hafer v'Chayasorah. Any Yechomish? Adoni Yohu, I got it. Adonio ben Chagiz. He was the son of David's wife Chagiz. Right. He decided he's going to be the king. And of course, Yoav happens to be one of those who supported him. So, naturally.
He backed the wrong candidate.
He backed the wrong candidate.
And so, right.
And that's the reason why not only Yoav, but also Yasar Cohen, even though he had faithfully followed King David all the days of his life, but David said, point Sadok instead. That's
Sadok
the high
Cohen,
right.
Ben Yehuda,
instead they went with the Shlomo HaMelech. All right. So, at any rate, when the word was out that Yoav had a price on his head, what did he do? He ran to the altar and he held on to the Karnos HaMizbeach, corners of the mizbeach. They had like horns projecting from the mizbeach, so he grabbed hold of it in order to find asylum, that they shouldn't be able to kill him. Okay? So we read over here then that, Rav Yehuda said the name of Rav, he said, Shtei toiz toyov oisashah. Made two mistakes. The siv, by Yonas Yoav Elochel Hashem, right? That Yoav ran to the tent of the Lord. Vayachazei pekanis hamizbeach. And he seized hold of the horns of the altar. So, Toh, mistake number one, She'eno kolet, elogago. The mizbeach itself, only the top of the mizbeach would provide asylum, right? But not the horns. Who tofas bekamoisa? Toa, he made a second mistake. What? She'eno kolet ela mizbeach beiselomim. Only the altar in the final Beis HaMikdash, in other words, would provide this asylum. Who tofas mizbeach shel Shiloh? Whereas he sees the altar of Shiloh. Of course, Shiloh, it was no longer in existence, but nevertheless, the idea being that until they built the Beis HaMikdash in the days of Shlomo HaMelech, so where was the Orem? Where was the Orem Kodesh? The answer is it was kept in a tent. And it's only afterwards, first of all, that, during the days of David, that they took it out and they brought it to Yerushalayim. But still, why did it remain in the tent? The answer is that the prophet Nosam came to David and said to him, David said to Nosan, he says, I want to build a Beis HaMikdash. So Nosan said to him, no siree. Two reasons. Reason number one we mentioned last week, namely that he had shed blood, and because he had shed blood and the altar was meant to bring peace between man and God, so therefore it was not fitting that he should build it. And secondly, there's another reason that's given, and that reason is that the Rebbeinu Shalom said, look, I don't need a house, he says. All these years I was in a tent, and the tent was good enough for me. So it could still remain in a tent. But you have a son, Shlomo, he's the one who will eventually build the Beis HaMikdash. So for both of these reasons, then we see that the Mizbeach, even though, it's called Mizbeach Shel Shiloh, but the idea is it was in a tent and it was not, the permanent Beis HaMikdash. And that would not provide asylum. So Abaye Yoimer, so Abaye says, Baho Nami Mitotor. He says, he made another mistake as well, namely, Tor Sheinu Kelet El Kohen Ba'avoda Biyode Behu Zor. He says he made another mistake in that the asylum that is granted by holding on to the top of the Mizbeach is only valid for a Kohen who is performing the Avodah at that particular moment. If they come looking for him in order to slay him, if he holds on to the Mizbeach, then in that case he would not be put to death. But he himself, he was a Zor. He was not a Kohen. Who's Zor Hoya? All right? So since we're mentioning about the mistakes, so Reish Lakish comes in with another set of mistakes. So Reish Lakish said, Sholeish Toyes, Osit Sarish Romi Litois. He says, the prince of Romi, in other words, the guardian angel of Rome, is also one day going to be held responsible for all the Tsaris that the people of Rome did to the people of Israel. And he'll make likewise, three similar mistakes. Dichsiv, as it is written, the Pasuk says in Yeshayahu, Mizeh bo mi Edom, who is this who comes from Edom? Chamutz begodim mibotzra, the one who is in the stained garments, the blood-stained garments, coming from Botzra. So, Toeh, mistake number one, Sheino koletes elebetze. He thinks he's going to find sanctuary where? In Botzra. But he made a mistake, because it's not Botzra, but it is Betzer. That's mistake number one, the Hugele lebotzra, whereas he sought refuge in Botzra, right? Toeh, mistake number two, Sheino koletes elesheigek. A city of refuge can only provide refuge for someone who has killed, as we said, inadvertently, right? He, you know, it was unplanned. He had never planned, you know, to murder. But who makes it? But he, on the other hand, you know, he was presumptuous. He was a murderer. Hoyato, what's number the mistake number three? She'eno kaletes el odon. Mistake number three was the fact that sanctuary is provided only for a human being. The Yehu Malach, and he's a Malach. The Malach doesn't get that. It's Nishtamech. You know, they tell the old story about a man who applied for a rabbinical position. Okay? So, he was very unqualified, but nevertheless, they wrote a letter of recommendation to the shul. What was the letter of recommendation? They say that this man is so outstanding. He's like Moshe Rabbeinu, and let's see, I forget already what the second one was, but the third one, he's like a malach. So they said, Shakespeare, Moshe Rabbeinu and a malach, okay? So he brings this beautiful letter of recommendation to the board. They look at it. They say, oh, outstanding candidate. Let's go and check. They went and checked to the person who wrote the letter recommendation. So he says, of course, I wasn't lying to you. He says, he's like Shakespeare, that Shakespeare didn't know any Hebrew, and he doesn't know any Hebrew. He's like Moshe Rabbeinu, in that Moshe Rabbeinu was a shtubel, and he's also a shtubel. Right, a stutterer, sorry. And the third, he says, he's like a malach. A malach is nicht ein Mensch, and it's echt nicht ein Mensch.
Sorry, can only be told in Yiddish.
Right. So this reminds me, right? Eino kalepas ela odam, nuhu malach. Nuhu malach. Amar Abba Bohu, will go a couple of more lines. Rabbah said, Ore miklot leinitnu lekvuri. Says, look, the cities of refuge were not meant for people to be buried there. Dichsiv, because it is written, umigrishayhem, the meadows that they have around it, the fields that they have around it, yulufhem tom nechushom uchol chayosim, that they are to be for their behemoths and for their possessions and for all chayosim. Now, of course, the word chayos, we know, normally means, you know, wild beast, but it's not the only translation. Chol chayosim means also for any means that have to do with chayim, with life. In other words, to provide a livelihood for them. As we've interpreted this verse before, if you remember, we said that in the Ore Miklot, you're not allowed to have a majority of people who are, inmates, right? But instead, the inhabitants, they have to have a majority of noble inhabitants so that they could provide all the amenities of life for the people who are exiled over there. So that's, another touch that we gave to the Luchol Chayosim. But the idea is, over here, there's life. Provide livelihood, okay?
These were the cities of the Levim, weren't they?
Yes, yes. But, I mean, after all, the same would apply to the Ori Miklat. Lechayim nitnu, right? They were given for life. Below the Kura. Not for death. Not for burial. Meisme. So the Reza Kash over there says, Shoma. Didn't we just say on the previous page that Shoma means over there, Shom Tehei Diroso, Shom Tehei Misoso, Shom Tehei Kvuroso? Right? That there is to be the place where he dwells, there is the place where he dies, and there he is to be buried. So they say, Rotzeach Shani. We're talking about here, it's different in the case of the Rotzeach, in the case of the manslayer, who we said has to be over there and live there and be buried there, you know, that he has to be there because he can't go out with, Admois Kohen HaGadol, and he has to be Lo'ilam. He says, Shani, it's different. Why? The Gali Be'Rachmona, because the Torah itself has a pasuk which we have interpreted as we did, namely that, you know, there is where he has to live, and there is where he has to die and be buried.
What happens if there's an inadvertent or a murderer in the Ir Miklot?
Well, obviously, what they would have to do then would have to send him to a Beis Din to judge him, and then either return him to the same Ir Miklot or maybe send him to a different
another
Ir Miklot. That's not spelled out.
It's not spelled out.
No, but it's an interesting possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think we shall stop at this point this evening, and Yirtzeh Hashem will continue from here next week. Neither rain nor snow, hopefully, will deter us, right? Huh? Of course, we're males, aren't we? So we're males.
This is January 3rd, 1996.
January 3rd, 1996.
Today is the
3rd,
right. And we're now on Yud Beis.
Okay, good.
We're on Yud Beis, Ahmed Aleph.
Right, right. Today is the 10th of January.
January 10th, 1996.
Hey, a new year. Got to get used to it. Starting to write checks now. The truth of the matter is that even in the days of the Talmud, a lot of Jews use for official documents dating which was based upon the accession of Seleucus as the king of Syria.
Mm.
And that was the date that they began dating everything.
Ah,
so you can say that, you know, in addition to our particular dating, you know, of 5,000, you know,
of the Roman calendar,
and so on, so that they also
Julian calendar, I should say.
As I say, that was the Seleucid calendar. Okay.
All right.
Now, the Mishnah that we studied learned also the following. It said, "Kishem shayu keletis," that just as the city provides refuge. It's on the previous page. You take a look, just opposite, right?
Okay,
Of course, in your edition, you have to
Yeah, it's all right. No, we have no problem.
But you do have a day. You can check it without having to turn back.
Yeah.
Okay. So it says, "Kishem shoyuke letis," right? Just as a city provides refuge. So, kach techumo kole. So, likewise, the techum, in other words, the boundary of the city also provides refuge. Now, what do we mean by the boundary? So this we already discussed. Namely, that there was a belt of 2,000 amos surrounding the city, and as we saw, it was meant to mean for fields and also meant for open spaces. The migrash is what they mean over here. Modern Hebrew today, migrash has a different sense. Today, migrash is, for example, it would be like a football field or a tennis stadium, right? Migrash tennis. That's what they use these days for migrash. They also use it for parking space, parking area, I mean, and so on. They sometimes use it for that too.
Migrash,
right. But over here, it means simply, you know, it's not a field, but it's an open space. It's meant to provide, you know, it should look nice, and so on.
It could also be for defense purposes, too.
Yeah, I suppose so. Except that an open field that...
You can see your enemy coming, and you don't. You can be prepared.
Yeah, that's a very good idea, frankly. Yeah.
Sure, because... and they can't sneak up on you.
But essentially, no, they built a wall around the place so that it should provide...
You could breach the wall if you get close enough to it.
No question about it. Right. Yeah. But of course, again, I want to recall, I mean, the fact that it speaks, you know, about this 2,000 amos belt around it, so this is where we have the expression that we call it the Tchum Shabbos, for example. This is what you're allowed to walk, but after that, you know, if you're outside the boundary, you would not be allowed to walk.
How would that be in actual today?
Problem is that how much is an amma? Nobody knows exactly. I prefer to think of an amma as being a foot and a half, in other words, 18 inches. But you have all kinds of estimates. Some say there's 24 inches, some would even go as far as 30 inches, it's concerned.
So, in other words, if you had to walk to shul, let's say more than 2 miles, you're going beyond 2,000 amos.
Yeah, but it doesn't apply to areas that are contiguous to each other, as long as you have houses and everything. For example, between Longmeadow and Springfield, or Chicopee and Springfield, or Ludlow and Springfield. I mean, even though you have, you know, because the houses really converge practically one on top of another, and even though there is, let's say, a river between, but nevertheless, you have bridges, and all day long, you know, people are using these bridges for traffic and so on. That, if you remember, I spoke about those who wanted to make Manhattan Island. Since it's an island surrounded, so that therefore it should be considered as if it had its own boundaries, you know, it had its own Chum Shabbos around it and so on. But it's as if it were an Eruv, in other words, Eruv, around
yeah.
it. But nevertheless, you know, most authorities would not accept it.
Would not accept that.
Right. For various reasons. One, they said because you had all kinds of bridges that tie it to other areas, so that it's not really independent. And secondly, because they said that it has such a large population, so much traffic going and so on, I mean, that the it sort of doesn't have the quiet atmosphere, let's say, of being, you know, a self-contained entity or something like that. Well, you can argue about that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. At any rate, coming back to the Mishnah over here, so now we see that even the Tachum, in other words, the area which surrounds it is up to the boundary of 2,000 amos around it, would also provide refuge for the Rotzeach, right?
Right.
So now the Gemara asks the question. It says, Rabbi Yehu. So literally, they hurled another statement against it. In other words, they question it. Why? Because it's written over there, the Yoshav Bo. In other words, he is to dwell within it. You know, the Ratzeach is to dwell in the Ir Miklat, right? Mm-hmm. And it says, Bo. Bo would mean, the implication would be in it, below Bitchumo, but not simply in the area which surrounds the city. In other words, he actually has to be living within the city so boundary itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not live in the open area, let's say, which surrounds the city. So Abai said, Lekasha, not a difficulty, he says. Kan Lekloit, and Kan Lador, he says, in one case, we're talking about providing refuge. In other words, or shelter, if you wish. Once he gets to the Amos, to the Tachum of the Ir HaMiklot, then in that particular case, he's safe from being attacked by the Goel Hadan. Even though he's not directly yet within the city walls itself.
So
but
Kamudur,
in order to dwell, where must he dwell? He must dwell within the wall area itself. Okay, in the city area itself. So now they question, he says, Ladur, you're talking about dwelling? He says, typically, can't we learn this from another statement by Basra, which says the ain oisin soda migrosh, lay migrosh soda, that you're not allowed to make a field into an open space. In other words, a field implies that it's plowed, you grow things in it, and so on. All right, so that's what a soda is. But or maybe at least it's grazing for cattle or something like that. But some would say to have an open area or something like that, the two are separate roles. You have a soda, you have a field, and then you have a migrosh, an open area. So, and likewise, you can't make, below migrosh, you don't make into a soda. So, not only that, but they continue and they say, lo migrosh here, nor can an open area be considered a city, below ear, migrosh, right? Nor can you consider a city as being an open area. In other words, the roles are not to be interchanged. So, if that's the case, the question is now, about it. Where must he dwell? We've just said that he must dwell where?
Within
the wall. Yeah. But he cannot dwell in the open areas and so on. So, is there a possibility of being maybe in an open area, and yet at the same time that you're protected because you're in the city? So, Rav Sheshes says, "Le'nitzucha elu mechilos." We require it for the case of, let's say, he dug a tunnel, and he dwelt in the tunnel, okay? And the tunnel starts, of course, within the city wall area, but it extends underneath the tchum. So in this case, is he permitted to dwell over there or not? So the answer is, all right, he's so nourished that he wants to live underground. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if he thought it was a pack shelter or what. At any rate, this states so. All right, let's take a look for a few moments at the Rashi, and then we'll come back and continue with the next part over there. Okay?
Yeah.
All right, so first of all, yes, if we go, we'll take a look, and we see it says over there, typically, do you see where it is? It says on the side, Ayin Taisvas, Bavet Azor, and so on and so forth. You see that? Mm. Yeah, all right. So it says, typically, why can't we learn it, you know, from this business, you know, that you can't make a migrash into a soda into a migrash, and certainly you can't make it into an ear and an ear into a migrash. You can't do it. So typically, why can't we learn from this? The ain bainin bias for migrash is not allowed to build a house within this area. In other words, where is he going to live? He can't live in a house in this open space because it cannot be
built.
Built. Right. It's not there for building, right. The im kain, because if he did, havalei migrash here, then in that case we would say that the migrash becomes a city, and we said it cannot be that, okay? And likewise, ein oisin soda shalaviyim, we're not allowed to make a field which belongs to the Levites, and you know, which is being used as a field by them, into a migrash. She nostu laleviyim, they gave the Levim, he says, alpayim amos oviparir, right? They gave him 2,000 amos around the city. Kedichsiv, as it's written, madoisim echutzalir, that you are to measure from the outside of the city, right? Uchsiv, and then another pasuk says, Mikhir ha'ir v'chutza, right, from the city wall outside, elef amos aviv, 1,000 amos. Now, incidentally, he knows that there is a contradiction, because for it says you ought to measure 2,000, and here it says from the wall of the city, 1,000. So he says, ha'ketzad, how do you reconcile the variance between the two measurements? He says, elef amos migrash. So he says, there is 1,000 amos is to be set aside for an open field. She'ein bo lo bayis lo soda, right? There is neither a house nor a field there. The hasha or, and the rest of the area, in other words, the other 1,000 is to be soda sechronim, to be set aside for fields and for vineyards. Okay, all right. So what if he decided that he goes into limchilos, into tunnels? So it says tachas hakarka, which is underground. She'ein oichleis b'migrash klum. In other words, they are not depriving the migrash. They're not eating it literally, but they're not depriving the migrash in any way. Milmala, you know, which is above them. V'ilav b'chsiv bo v'lei b'tchumo. And if it weren't for the fact that it is written within it and not within its boundary, o'yisi oimer. So I might think that yodur bitchumo b'me'ora, right? That he should be permitted to dwell in within the tchum as long as he's inside a cave underneath the ground. But obviously, from the way Rashi phrases it, what do we see? We see that in the final analysis, even then, I mean, he's not supposed to do it, okay? In other words, he has to live in a house with all the amenities and only within the walls of the city itself. Okay. Then the Mishnah continued and said, "Ratzayach sheyotzeh chutz latchum." Okay, that's the last part of the Mishnah on the previous page again. Says, "Ratzayach sheyotzeh chutz latchum." Right, if the manslayer right happened to go outside of the tchum, umetzoy goel hadom, and the goel hadom found him over there outside the tchum, right? So Rabbi, so there's a difference of opinion. We learned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yosef Aglili Yomer, he says that what? Mitzvah biad goel hadom, right? That it's a mitzvah literally given over to the goel hadom, literally the hand of the goel hadom. It's a mitzvah given to the goel hadom that he is to slay. He's to slay the manslayer. Urishus biad kol adam, and there is permission given to any other person to carry out this. The fact that he dared to step out
outside
the tchum, right, outside the boundary of the Ir HaMiklat, which he had no business doing, so it made him immediately, let's say, liable
vulnerable,
to death,
vulnerable.
Right, either to death at the hand of the girl Hadam, in which case, according to Rabbi Yosef Glulli, it's a mitzvah, or any other person who wants to exact it and who has the privilege of carrying out the execution. According to Rabbi Yosef Glili, obviously, we don't necessarily hold according to him. Rabbi Akiva says, no. He says, It's a reshus biyad goel hadam. It's not a mitzvah to goel hadam that he has to kill the manslayer, but it's only, you know, it's permitted unto him if he wants, if he does it, okay, he's not going to be punished for it. However, b'chol adam, any other person, we learned chayovim olav, would be liable for having slain the manslayer. In other words, he would be liable to be sentenced by a court of law for having done so. Okay? Might even involve the death penalty, according to Rabbi Akiva, as you can see. Okay? So, as we see, there is this machlokes between them. So the Gemara now continues. It says, Tana Rabbanan. Yeah, going back over there, it says, Tana Rabbanan.
Oh, okay.
Did you find a place?
Yeah.
Okay. Don Rabbon, it says, V'rotzach
Goel
Hadom Mitzoretzeh. It's written, you know, that the Goel Hadom slays the Rotzeh, slays the manslayer, right? So, Mitzvah V'yad Goel Hadom. This is what Rabbi Yossi, I believe, says, right? That it is a mitzvah toward the Goel Hadom to slay the Rotzeh, because it's written V'rotzach, right?
Why is it a mitzvah? I don't understand that.
Why is it a mitzvah?
Yeah, I mean, it was an he didn't mean to kill anybody. It was an accident.
This is correct. But according to Rabbi Yossi Haglili, he has protection from the Goel Hadam only as long as he abides by the law that he stays within the
Yom
HaMikvah.
So by
stepping outside
the law.
Right, exactly. By stepping outside the wall. And this, of course, you know, it happened while the Kohen Gadol was still alive. Naturally, we're talking about that,
right.
Okay?
Right.
By stepping outside the wall, he automatically is violating the terms of his punishment. Terms of his punishment say, you have to be banished to the Ir HaMikva. The fact that we learned the Chol Chayosim means that he's to be provided with everything, food, raiment, dira, and everything else, and so on.
Does it, right? Does the family come with him, too?
Yeah, it's possible. There's no law that says only he, and he can't bring his family. Because, I mean, the idea being, you know, that if he has to be provided with all the amenities, naturally I would think that a wife and children are also amenities.
I would think so, yeah.
Nowhere does it say that he can't take his wife.
Wife.
Right,
yeah.
It doesn't say that. He's going to live a normal life over there, then. And that's true. He needs a wife to take care of him.
Some instances he may have to live there the rest of his life and be buried there.
Right. Right.
Depends on how the circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, as we say, according to Rabbi Yossi Haglili, he interprets the idea, it says, for Rotsav Goel Hadom, so it has to mean that it's a mitzvah to Goel Hadom to do it. And in Goel Hadom, and if there is no Goel Adam around, then in that case we should be out called Adam, right? And every person has any other person has permission in order to do it if he chooses it, according to Divrei Rabbi Yossi Haglili. But Rabbi Akiva Omer, right, that Rishus Biad Goel Adam, it's not obligatory, it's not a mitzvah, but the Goel Adam has the option of punishing the Rotzeach if he leaves the Yer HaMiklot, right? They call Adam Chayav Molad. But anybody else is going to be liable for having killed, you know, the Goel Hadam.
Mm-hmm.
Having killed the Rotzeach, right. So they say, it might happen to Rabbi Yossi Haglili. What is the reason that Rabbi Yossi Haglili holds that it's a mitzvah? So he says as follows. He says, Mi Kesiv, does the Pasuk say, Im Rotzeach?